Good morning and welcome to Locus Focus. I'm Barbara Bernstein, your host for this weekly conversation about our place on the planet. As an increasing number of pathogens that infect humans, animals, and plants are developing resistance to antibiotics and pesticides, while farmers spray more pesticides and doctors prescribe more antibiotics, the diseases and infections continue unabated. This morning, we talk with toxicologist Emily Monison, author of Natural Defense, Enlisting Bugs and Germs to Protect Our Food and Health, who argues that bugs and germs are the answer to these problems. We'll learn about the parallels between medicine and agriculture and the importance of considering both together, as scientists around the world are bringing together ecology and modern technology to create alternatives to chemical responses. Emily, welcome to Locus Focus.
Oh, thank you. Glad to be here.
Well, I'd like to start by talking about this connection between what's in our gut and what's in our backyard, which is something I first actually got a good sense about from a book by David Montgomery and Anna Bleakley, who I interviewed a couple years ago, called Hidden Half of Nature. And you also refer to that in your book. So I wonder, what is your sense of this linkage and why is it so important in order for us to understand how to promote both plant and animal and human health?
What's happened over the last few years, as you know, after talking with David Montgomery, we have a much better understanding of this sort of microbiome, both in the environment, and now we have a better understanding of the microbiome in our bodies, so sort of all the different microbes that inhabit the soil and the communities and the importance of sort of trying to maintain those communities. I think what's happened is that now, I think everybody has probably heard about microbiome in their bodies in the last few years. It's kind of unavoidable. And so there's a lot of parallels between sort of maintaining healthy soils and maintaining healthy bodies through sort of working with these microbiomes and all the bacteria and viruses and other microbes that inhabit both our bodies or the soil and maintaining the health of that system. So I think that's sort of the parallel, and, you know, it's a very close parallel. We're now understanding that, it's so important to maintain these systems and that when we want to eradicate a specific pathogen, it's really important to consider the whole. And so, and rather than doing it in a sort of broad, non-specific way, it's best to sort of understand the community and try to manage it better by sort of eradicating specific pathogens or specific organisms that are causing the problem.
Well, when microbes are first discovered, and I'd like you maybe to give a little bit of background on that, it seemed like at first we didn't understand what they were, and then they seemed like they were all evil, and so we had this intent, as we discovered how to do it, to just eradicate them. But let's talk a little bit about our whole evolving relationship with microbes and understanding microbes.
Yeah, so, maybe it was several hundred years ago when sort of the first microbes that there's actually something that you couldn't see that was living on this earth was discovered. And then it was a couple hundred years later when it was discovered that some of those sort of invisible organisms, bacteria, were what was causing human disease. And so that was a big step forward because these were days when, just a couple hundred years ago or less, you could, die from a rose prick or a very minor, stab of a needle or something. And so with that understanding that there's actually an organism causing those diseases or that could kill you, the next step was to think about how could we fend off those diseases. And so then there was a push to discover chemicals that could kill those organisms. And so that was sort of the emergence of antibiotics and a lot of the work by Louis Pasteur and Paul Ehrlich before him, who were scientists and doctors and chemists working to understand how they could use chemicals and direct them at these organisms. These were kind of miraculous chemicals when antibiotics were first discovered. So when these chemicals, just like some of the first pesticides, when those were first discovered, they were kind of miraculous because they could kill these organisms that were causing problems. And so we kind of developed this history of dominating nature and eradicating whatever bothered us. And we're all beneficiaries of that. We've had about roughly 100-year history or so of sort of managing disease and pests and pathogens with these kinds of chemicals. And now we're realizing, with this improved understanding of things that we can't see, like the microbiome, that there's a really rich world out there of things that we can't see. And when we try to eradicate just the few things that are bothering us, and we eradicate many different species, that's really eventually causing more of a problem for us. And so we need to find a new way to deal with these species that are problematic. So we can't just dominate with the chemicals anymore. And there, of course, as you know and everybody knows, there's a lot of other problems with using chemicals or side effects to antibiotics, and there's environmental damage caused by pesticides.
Well, in a couple of moments, we're going to talk a little bit more about what that widespread damage that comes from widespread use of antibiotics and pesticides, and also what some of the alternatives are. But right now, I'm going to be joined by Linda, who's out in the large production room, and we're going to talk to you about why we can solve a lot of our wide-scale problems here by, on a very local, small-scale level, supporting this voice for what you never hear anyplace else, which is the voice of KABU. And if you call right now at 877-500-5266, you can become a member of KABU. So, Linda, what's going on out there, and what can people do to help?
Well, what's going out here is people sitting here by their phones. They've been answering and ringing off the wall. We need them to start doing that for this show. It's 877-500-5266. You know, this is one of the best shows we have on KBOO, and I'm just going to say that without any hesitation. Locus Focus brings you in-depth interviews about so many issues around our environment and about so many areas of our environment that you just don't hear about in depth anywhere else, and they're always worth tuning into and listening to, and I do regularly, and I think many of you who are listening today probably do that as well. And we want to ask you to use this moment right now to become a member of KBOO or increase your membership, because that's the way you show your support for this show. I mean, you can show it other ways to her, but that's the way we're asking for now, because we're in our membership drive, and your dollars are what keeps this station on the air. So the number to call is 877-500-5266. If you're interested in doing it on the web, it's really easy to do, kboo.fm. Maybe you're listening to this on your computer and you've seen that donate button up at the top. Just go ahead and click that and become a member. You can continue listening while you become a member. We do have this book for someone to call in. It's a $75 minimum pledge. That's only $6.25 a month. It's the book, The Natural Defense, Enlisting Bugs and Germs to Protect Our Food and Health. It's by Emily Monson, the author that you've been hearing Barbara speak to. Barbara's just one of our most experienced and I would say one of our best programmers. She really knows her issues and goes in deep and has good relationships with all sorts of experts around the nation about issues relating to our environment. And that's just the kind of programming you're not going to get anywhere else. It's volunteer programming. And that's probably why it's got so much heart in it. But Not just
that is a reason to have heart in it. It's the fact that our environment is our body, and it's really easy to be passionate about our health. And when you look at your environment as just an extension, why would you not care? Why would you not be excited about protecting it? And so by picking up this book, you'll find a way to help make your environment and therefore your body a lot healthier.
And that's Celeste, and you've heard that voice many Monday mornings. That's right. I'm Linda. We are volunteers here at KBOO,
yes,
and we want you to become a member. We want you to join the KABU family. It's so, so easy to do.
It is easy. 877-500-5266.
Say, what's the goal for this show?
Let's see.
$650.
Okay, so we got a lot of work to do in the next 48 minutes.
Okay, yes, in the next 48 minutes, what we need is a minimum of 11 people calling in and just pledging that basic pledge. Or if you want to donate more, please do. 877-500-5266, kboo.fm, give now.
You know, I have been suggesting that people give $10 a month.
And that's a good amount.
I wanted to suggest that you can get a great audio drive. You've heard about this before. It's got literally years and years of wonderful archives, authors that you want to hear, like Chris Hedges, Winona LaDuke, et cetera. But it also has a computer security toolkit that you can get. And that's just $10 a month. So call us right now at 877- 500-5266. We're going to go back to Barbara now for the rest of this program.
Well, thanks, Linda and Celeste. I look forward to talking to you in a little bit. And I want to thank you for all those kind words. But I also want to say to all those people that I meet out in the community who tell me how much they like this show, I love that you love the show, but I will really love if you help support this show by calling right now at 877-500-5266. Become a member of KABU. It's your best way of showing the kind of support that you expressed to me in public, to be showing it fiscally when we need it in this time of need during our pledge drive. We're talking this morning with toxicologist Emily Monison, who's author of Natural Defense, Enlisting Bugs and Germs to Protect Our Food and Health. Well, when you're talking about the search for understanding microbes, Emily, I was thinking back to this book that I read as a child called Microbe Hunters. And I think it was really this sense that the, people like Louis Pasteur were, you know, out like on the safari with their slings and arrows going after these microbes and just kind of broad basically trying to wipe them out. What's the difference between that take and what people have learned in the wake of all the kinds of antibiotic resistance and pesticide resistance that we've discovered in the last 20, 30 years?
So I think you named it. One of the big problems is resistance. And so way back when Alexander Fleming, discovered penicillin, and penicillin came into popular use after World War II, and it was this really kind of miracle drug, he understood the consequences of the problems of overuse. And back then, just as now, they wanted to put penicillin into everything, toothpaste and lotions and cream. I mean, and now we had, just recently you could have shopping cart handles and toys and mattresses with antibacterials in them. And he warned back then that, if you keep kind of hammering microbes with these kinds of chemicals, they can evolve resistance. And resistance is something in the microbial community that's out there. A lot of these resistance genes recently have been discovered that they've been out there probably for millions of years. But what we have been doing when we use antibiotics to the extent that we've been using them, whether in, human health or agriculture, is that we're selecting for those organisms that have these resistance genes, and then it enables them to resist the antibiotics. And I think, as a lot of people probably know by now, there's, one disease after another is becoming increasingly multiple antibiotic resistance. And so the fear is that eventually we're going to sort of return to those days that are the pre-antibiotic days, when infections that we can now cure will no longer be curable. And so this is really a pretty frightening proposition. And the other thing that I think didn't come out until sort of fairly recently is that we're changing our whole microbiome, so the microbial community that inhabits us or that lives with us, when we do use these antibiotics. So beyond just the problem of resistance is the problem of, sometimes when we take antibiotics, killing off large portions of microbes that can be helpful or that aren't harmful and that are just part of our own ecosystem. And then what happens when we do that, when we sort of suppress those populations, whether it's the population in our gut or on our skin or whatever, sort of paves the way or makes an opening for potentially disease-causing opportunistic infections. So that's another problem with just using too many antibiotics.
Well, I want to get back to the first problem first, because the second problem is probably what we're going to spend most of the rest of the show on. But a couple of years ago, I interviewed this bee expert, and he talked about how bees make their own antibiotics, basically. And I think this is true with many, many species in nature. And they're always, they produce an antibacterial serum, whatever, to fight off the pathogens that attack them. And then the pathogens that attack them develop resistance to that. So then they create new ones. And that this is total dynamic in nature, where this give and take between, say, bacterial predator and prey of evolving, constantly evolving and co-evolving to kind of out-resist each other. But when the way that we've dealt with antibiotics as human beings is that we just take it in this kind of, we freeze frame a moment in antibacteria history, and it's really irrelevant when you take it down a few years. Does that make sense to you?
Wait, Sarah, when you take it down, I think it makes sense, but I was so interested in the bee part, and it's really fascinating about making their own sort of, controlling their own microbes.
Yeah, so my understand. So I mean, I've heard this. I actually heard this on Health Watch, another one of our KBOO shows, where there's a lot of talk about how in nature there's always this kind of one species creates some kind of resistance or an antibiotic, yeah, actually to one of their pathogens, but they will constantly revise it because the pathogens are always reacting. So that's kind of the dynamic of nature. But the dynamic of antibiotics in human use is very static.
Ah, I see. So you're saying we're using a sort of set of antibiotics that we have become dependent on, and we don't have that dynamic ability of continually changing them as bacteria become resistant.
Right.
And we have changed. You know, there are a lot of different sort of So one of the problems is there's a lot of, if you look now, and there's a lot of call for new antimicrobials because there hasn't been a lot of development. You know, there's sort of a set class of antibiotics that means that they work different ways. And maybe there's, I don't know how many, maybe say just, for example, 5 or 6 different mechanisms by which antibiotics work. And we've been using that same set of mechanisms for many decades now. We haven't really come up with a new set of antimicrobials. And so, yes, that's one of the problems, is that we're stuck with this set, and we haven't really the pharmaceutical industry and others have not put a lot of effort into finding new ways. And that is a big problem because, as you mentioned, we're sort of static, have become static.
Yeah, it sort of kind of reminds me of when I went climbing Mount St. Helens a few years ago, and it just turned out that my friend I was with was using a map from 1982, which was shortly after the blast and before any of the trails were reestablished. And it was a little hard. This map was kind of useless, basically. And so maybe we're using 30-year-old maps in a way when we're dealing with using a penicillin or some of the very older arcane antibiotics that really have been, that the pathogens have evolved well past.
Yeah, well, so, and like I said, a lot of those genes have been out there. It's just that we've selected them with these classes of antibiotics because, as you mentioned before, there is this ongoing give and take between bacteria. A lot of these antibiotics came from microbes, and so it's sort of that ongoing give and take between microbes in their world managing each other that we've sort of found the antibiotics or the chemicals that they're producing. That's a lot of where we get it. Many of our antibiotics from. So the ability to resist had been out there in the microbial world, but not to the extent that we have this problem now where the microbes that we're exposed to are resistant to all these different classes. And yeah, so we're not using, we need to find new ways. And some of those new ways are probably to really rethink how we do this, not necessarily just try to find another chemical. Because one of the problems with a lot of the antibiotics we use is that they're broad spectrum. And medically, many decades ago, that was probably considered a good thing, to just have, you know, one antibiotic that could kill a lot of different organisms. But now we're realizing that that's not really what we want. The more specific we can be when we want to kill a particular pathogen, the better. And I think that's where some of the newer discoveries for how to deal with bacteria infection will come from is increasingly specific kinds of antimicrobials.
Well, I'm looking forward to talking more about that in just a few moments because that's actually one of the most fascinating parts of your book. So right now we're talking with Emily Monison, who's author of Natural Defense, Enlisting Bugs and Germs to Protect Our Food and Health. And now we're going to go out and talk with Linda and Celeste about why you should call right now, 877-500-5233, and become a member of KBOO.
That was interesting. Your threes had to get in there somewhere, Barbara. It's actually 877-500-5266. And you were listening to Barbara Bernstein.
Who can't spell.
That's okay. That's all right. You know, that's all part of us being a community-based endeavor. Not only are we your neighbors and friends, but we're also forgiving because we recognize, well, we're all your neighbors and friends. And you're bringing us some good information, though, Barbara, with your guests, to help us be healthy neighbors and friends. Linda and I were sitting up here and just discussing the whole idea of having helpful germs, and having been a nurse back in another lifetime, one of the things that I find is really helpful is to have a good, basic, daily probiotic regimen. And so I'm really thankful for your guests for bringing this information up, especially since now so many of our medical professionals are running out of alternatives because the various antibiotics we have are being, well, they're not working. Many of the germs have become resistant to them, but become resistant to a lot of natural methods.
And this is exactly what I love about KBOO. You know, we were listening to you and talking at the same time here with the mics off because you stimulated a conversation about microbes and our whole experience with antibiotics and all of that. So thank you so much, Barbara, for bringing such relevant information, obviously, to us. And I'll bet you this foodie audience out there of Portland has a lot of experience with microbes as well.
I hope they do.
We have to say, I'm going to say the name of your book again, but we've already run out of copies of that. That's Emily Monson, author of Natural Defense, Enlisting Bugs and Germs to Protect Our Food and Health. That was the book, and that's the author you're going to get to continue to hear during this hour, but you're not going to be able to get that book, but we have prizes for you. So if you dial 877-500-5266, you can get
the Brighton Bush gift certificate.
Okay. Ooh, talk about
now,
being in the environment.
This is a gift certificate good for $100 worth of Brighton Bush Hot Springs lodging or services. And this is Sunday through Thursday only, though. This would cover the cost of an overnight cabin accommodation with meals and full use of springs and sauna on weekdays. Or it can be used for other services provided by the Brighton Bush community. Check this out. This is how good of a deal it is. For just $150 minimum pledge. Well, you're getting twice as much as you actually donate. You know, you're spending $150. You're donating to KBOO $50 because you're getting $100 back in Brighton Bush services. And this is another way of taking good care of your health.
So this is a minimum monthly pledge of $12.50 a month?
Yes.
And that's it. And, you know, we've been talking $10 a month, and many of you have been calling in. Well, we're going to say $12.50 a month if you would like to get these services from Brighton Bush. And if you haven't ever been up, this is up in the hills outside of Salem, I guess I want to say.
Actually, it's due south of mm-hmm. Estacada.
Mm-hmm. Is that where it is?
Yeah, and it's quite a bit, like 80 miles south of Estacada. Okay. And it's in a cell phone free zone.
Wow.
It's way off the grid. They generate their own electricity through a little micro dam that they have on the Brighton Bush River.
Yes.
And the only negative thing I can say about Brighton Bush is that it has been closed for the last few weeks because of the smoke and the fire danger.
Yes.
But it will be back.
It will be back. And we also want to support those businesses anyway. So thank you for reminding us that the business is open, Barbara.
Yeah, so I've been there once, and obviously I'm not very good at telling you where it is, but I can tell you that I loved sitting out in the open air in those natural hot springs. That was just spectacular, and looking at the stars from there. So become a member for any other reason, just to be able to go to Brighton Bush. It's easy to do. You make the difference with your dollars. One of the things I want to say is this information that Barbara brings us every week and that you can count on every week, you don't get anywhere else, and it's really valuable to be able to tune in and hear this kind of well-developed programming, really well-produced programming. Call 877-500-5266 and become a member right now at $10 a month or $12.50 a month to get the services at Brighton Bush.
Yes,
once
the
again,
Brighton Bush
that,
gift certificate.
You know, I'm also going to suggest that some of you out there might be on your bicycle riding around and want to stop over at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue. Usually someone comes in and brings someone.
Us.
That's right. We'll show you around. We'll show you the studios because we're a community radio station. You get to see all the faces behind the voices. We hope we don't look too different than we sound.
Well, I hope we look as intelligent as we want to sound.
So we need you is the
point.
We to keep this radio station on the air. This pledge drive has been going really well, but we need to meet our goal of $650, and we still have much of that to go.
Yes,
please,
we do.
Take
and
up that
you
phone
can make
right
that
now.
Difference. You, it takes you, and you're getting information that keeps you healthy. Barbara has brought on a very timely guest who is telling you how to take really good care of yourself, low cost, very very inexpensive, because you're using foods and natural agents out there. The bugs and germs are already there. We just have to cultivate the right ones in our own personal ecological system. And you didn't get this information anywhere else but on KBOO. So you can either go to KBOO.fm and donate online, or you can call 877-500-5266. And I'll say that again because I know you need that nudge.
Ring, 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 ring. We need all the phones ringing at once to make our goal.
877-500-5266.
I want to thank Celeste and Linda. We'll be talking to you again in a bit. This morning, we're talking with toxicologist Emily Monison, who's author of Natural Defense, Enlisting Bugs and Germs to Protect Our Food and Health. We've been talking about how antibiotics, and we didn't be specific, but also pesticides are broad spectrum. They just kind of go in and eradicate all microbes and pathogens, and often eradicate a lot of microbes that would be very beneficial both to the soil and to our guts. So I wanted to talk for the last part of the show about what is the alternative to that, and how are scientists developing antibiotics or other kinds of methods of attacking specific pathogens and leaving the rest of the flora and fauna in our guts and in our soil healthy.
Yeah, so this is the most interesting part of this project was to explore these new kinds of solutions. And there are many different ways. I picked a few, but one of the one that sort of relates most to health and is also being used increasingly or developed for agricultural reasons as well is bacteriophage therapy, which I think is just kind of fascinating and exciting. And so what bacteriophages are viruses that infect bacteria. And it's believed that for every bacterium in this world is infected by at least one phage, bacteriophage. So I'll call them phages, but these are viruses that infect bacteria. And so these are very specific for different kinds of bacteria and even different strains of bacteria. And it's a therapy that was actually known at the turn of last century, so sort of pre-antibiotic boom, traditional antibiotic boom, pre-penicillin. And then it was being used to cure diseases like typhoid, which is really one of the diseases that it was initially used to cure back in the early part of last century. And what they would do is they would expose patients to these viruses against a particular bacterium like typhoid, and the cure was just as miraculous as some of the antibiotics. But once antibiotics came along, phage therapy sort of drifted out of the sort of medical consciousness, at least in the Western world. They weren't used here anymore, and there are a number of reasons for that, including there was really no federal regulation over these kinds of treatments, and so there were some very ineffective treatments, and so they kind of got a bad name. And then antibiotics sort of became the darling of pharmaceuticals. But meanwhile, the eastern part of the world, Eastern Europe, they continued to develop phage therapy. And so over the last century, particularly in Tbilisi, Georgia, they've developed phage therapy to treat today's diseases. And so I have a story in the book about a woman who was struggling with MRSA. This is just a couple of years ago, having very difficult time with it being cured here. She was at the end of her rope. She didn't know where to turn to. A lot of different treatments. She even had surgery. It didn't help. And eventually, she took a chance. She really didn't know what else to do. She traveled to Tbilisi, Georgia, where they had phages, these viruses that they had isolated and cultivated to treat her specific staph MRSA, so that's the multi-drug resistant staph aureus infection. And they had a cocktail of phages, so what they used, and this is keeping in mind when we discuss the problem of evolution and that, you know, bugs continually evolve and they're kind of in this one-upsmanship kind of competition. And so bacteria can evolve resistant to phages, and then phage evolve to infect those bacteria, so there's an ongoing evolutionary sort of game. And so what they use is a phage cocktail. They use many different phages. And they're very aware of when those phages, when the bacteria have evolved resistance, and then they don't use those phages. And so they had a cocktail, they treated her, and she was cured. And so this is something that increasingly here in the U.S., there's been a lot of attention. There's been meetings in D.C. between the FDA and a lot of other organizations and federal agencies involved in sort of stewarding our antimicrobials and, you know, developing new drugs to figure out how we can start to better study phage and to eventually use them in our own pharmacopoeia. So that, and that, and it's actually, so, and with the parallel, we haven't talked a lot about sort of combining the agricultural and the human health, but phage is also used and being developed as well for using in agricultural situations to deal with pathogens in the field that infect certain kinds of crops. And also it's currently used, these are, because phage infect bacteria normally, we're loaded with bacteriophage ourselves. All our bacteria probably have some phage infecting them. And so they're really a pretty, they're pretty safe so far, as anybody knows. They've not seen any harmful side effects. And we're always exposed to them anyway. And so they've been approved for use in food products, for surface food products, I believe on some maybe cold cuts and some cheeses. They already use phage to control specific microbes that might be problematic. So it's a really, I think it's a really cool and really exciting thing. And it's something that some people have been working on for a long time, but have not gotten any kind of spotlight until now because of the problem of antibiotic resistance.
Well, it's interesting that this is an example of going back to a much older tradition.
Yep.
And I'm thinking that sort of a similar thing has happened in agriculture, and some of it is more generically like a turning back towards organic agriculture, which used to be, everything used to be organic before the advent of the chemical industry coming and taking over agriculture and fertilizers and pesticides. But I'm wondering if one of the things that I found curious was in agriculture, there's also ways of zeroing in on certain pathogens through sexual aspects of nature and through hormones. And so I want to talk a little bit about some of the diseases that are actually really running, threatening to damage and destroy a lot of crops, and what are some of the non-pesticide methods of dealing with that?
So these, what I wrote about was, I think if you're referring to insect pheromones?
Yeah.
Talking about insects now, but it's a, you know, similar problem that we need to really, we're much better off, or growers are much better off, if they zero in on specific insect problems rather than using broad-spectrum pesticides. And so what is coming into use increasingly, and it has been pretty effective when they've been used, are sex hormones. And so female moths will release chemicals into the air to attract male moths to mate. And so what chemical ecologists, these are people who work with sort of insect chemicals that are released and try to understand them and then how maybe they can be used to our benefit, have realized is that if they can understand what the chemicals are that are being released, they can produce them in the laboratory, then they can release them in large quantities. They can disrupt mating by confusing the males. If they're releasing so much female hormone into, or female chemical into an orchard, say, it's very difficult for those males to find the female because there's just female scent all over the place. And so it's called mating disruption. At least that's one way of using insect pheromones. And it's increasingly being used for orchards. And I read recently that I think in the West Coast, there's something like 80 to 90% of orchards now use pheromones. And again, you know, there's the benefit of these things is that they're very specific. So you're only, you know, eradicating, or you're disrupting, not necessarily eradicating, but you're disrupting their mating so that they're not laying eggs, and the eggs are what turn into the wormy larvae that are in your apples or other fruits or walnuts or almonds or whatever. They're very specific, and so you need the specific hormone for that specific insect. And then the problem is that they're very specific, and so they're really good for a pest, and so you need to have different pheromones for different kinds of pests, which is, you know, one of the downsides. But in some orchards that have been using these kinds of mating disruption, they've found that they can reduce their pesticide application for that particular pest by upwards of 75%, which is really a great thing. Increasingly, I think growers are sort of, as I think one grower sees that it works, it begins to expand its use.
Well, we're talking this morning with Emily Monison, who has written a book called Natural Defense, Enlisting Bugs and Germs to Protect Our Food and Health. And we're going to talk now with Celeste and Linda about how you can protect our mental, physical, spiritual, political, whatever health here in the Portland area and actually any part of the world that's listening to KBOO by supporting our community radio station.
That's right. This is Linda. I'm here with Celeste.
Hello.
Here in our membership central. You have been calling in and we need more of you to call. We're probably about halfway there to our goal for this hour. I want to thank Ed, who's a renewing member from Portland. Thank you, Ed, for becoming a member.
Yes, thank you.
And we want to tell you the number first of all because you want to become a member, and the way you can do that is by calling 877-500-5266. And you know, if you would like to become a member today for $150 a year, let me check that out about how much that will be a month. That's a $12.50 a month contribution. You can get a special gift certificate to Brighton Bush. This is that wonderful location about 80 miles south of Estacada, I believe, according to Barbara Bernstein. But it's up in the mountains on a natural hot springs, and they have wonderful services. So that is one thing that you can get for your $150 pledge.
It might be gone. Is it gone?
Going. Going fast, you guys are. You have been calling in. We have a lot of other gifts for members. I'm going to suggest you call in at the $10 a month level, no matter what the gift. The people here who are answering the phones can tell you about t-shirts, books, audio drives, and other wonderful enhancements we have for you to become a member. But I think the real enhancement is the conversation you've just been listening to.
Yes, the programming.
Between Barbara and Emily, the author of Clean Power, Healthy Communities.
That's not Natural Defense.
Totally, that's not.
Enlisting Bugs and Germs to Protect Our Food and Our Health.
That's the problem with being a talking head on the radio. Sometimes I will just read what's in front of me and it won't be the right thing. I apologize.
Well, that's because you went exploring to look at all the good programming we had. I mean, I'll just tell the truth. We were looking at all the good programming we had, and we were just very thankful that you, our supporting members, make this possible. But check this out. This is something that you can get if you are going to pledge today. We want you to know that everybody who becomes a member now will be entered to win a prize for today's drawing, which is two subscriptions to Literary Arts 2017-2018 five-part Portland Arts and Lecture Series. And this is at the Schnitzer Concert Hall. I've actually been to some of these.
They're great.
And they are great. They are stimulating, great conversations, educational, just broaden your horizons just like KBOO does.
And every one of you who calls in today will be entered into the drawing. The drawing.
Yes.
We'll be entered into the drawing to get this pair of tickets. We have others that you can get that are based on the amount that you pledge, but this is no matter if you pledge or not. If you call in at 877-500-5266, but we know you want to make a difference with your dollars. So put some dollars to that call, whichever way it is. A lot of people have been calling in at the $10 a month level. At that level, there are many different gifts we have, but what's most important is you will be sustaining our station throughout the year at a level that really is doable for you and makes a difference to the community. You know, we're a community radio station. The only way that a lot of the programming we do gets out to you is because we're community radio, because we have so many intelligent and diverse volunteers who want to bring you information about what's happening in the world, information you won't hear elsewhere. I know you really do appreciate that about KBOO. You probably love some of the music as well. Call us right this minute at 877-500-5266. We've been working.
You know you want to be a member. You have not stepped up to the plate yet, perhaps. Or maybe you can increase your pledge. 877-500-5266 and make your pledge now.
I want to thank Linda and Celeste, and we'll talk to you in a little bit. This morning we're talking with Emily Monison, author of Natural Defense, Enlisting Bugs and Germs to Protect Our Food and Health. Emily, one of your chapters is called Enemy of Our Enemy is Our Friend, Replacing Pesticides with Nature's Chemistry. Now, the pheromone, insect pheromone example that you just gave is probably one example of that, but I wanted to talk about some other ones that are more specific, not dealing with bugs, but dealing with bacterial infestations in plants. And I'm thinking, you talk about it, I think you call it bacteria in a bottle.
Yeah. So this is, and I think one of your fund drives mentioned probiotics. And so this is really ways of people trying to find probiotics that can be useful in agriculture or beneficial bacteria and how they can use them. And so I think people might be familiar with sometimes you can actually now go buy bacteria that you can spray on your plants. I've sprayed some bacteria on a fungus that was on my grapes a couple of years ago. And the problem is that the good thing is that those are sort of spore-forming bacteria. So they're bacteria that can sit there and wait. But then, you know, once you spray them, they'll come out of their spores and they'll start producing chemicals that can kill or fend off other either fungi or bacteria or what have you. And so the scientists that I wrote about here, what they've been studying is they said, you know, well, that's great, but that's a limited number of bacteria, those spore-forming bacteria. And so they wanted to work with bacteria that didn't form spores, that were just bacteria that, can sort of be activated at any time. But that means that you have to kind of keep them happy. You have to culture them, and it's very hard to just be able, for a farmer to be able to apply that kind of bacteria and have it active on the field. And the benefit of those kinds of bacteria, I think these were particular kind of bacteria that was producing chemicals that would help not only help nourish the plants, but also potentially fend off harmful bacteria in the soil. And so it's a good thing to apply to the soil, but you need to have it active. And so they were working really on a technology, which is very simple, where a grower could just sort of press a button and kind of get the bacteria that they want to spray in their field sort of all happy and actively dividing, which they liken to kind of like when you're proofing yeast and you get the yeast going before you put it into your bread. And so they have this kind of technology where a grower just has to press the button. The sort of culture mixes with the bacteria this bacteria is beneficial for their crops and can boost growth and apply that to the field. And so this is sort of another growing area of research, both for sort of small startups and for large ag companies, is to find these kinds of bacteria and then ways that growers can apply them.
So where are these bacteria residing before the farmer pushes the button?
In this case, they're in, you know, in bottles that they can store. And so that was one of the interesting things, is that, you know, these are living organisms. And so how do you store them on a shelf and use them when you need them? And so this is sort of part of what they figured out, was how to sort of keep them just happy enough so that they could, you know, sit for months or however long, so that they could be sold and the grower can store them until they need them. And then they just mix the culture together, and then they can use them.
So how does BT, which a lot of people are familiar with, I guess we've all used it at one point or another for organic gardeners, yeah. How does that fit into the spectrum of these? Is that one of the bacteria in a bottle, or is that more like the spores that you were talking about?
I don't want to say anything wrong here. I mean, the BT is actually the toxins produced by the Bacillus bacteria, or bacterium. Since I didn't really write about that specifically, except for
mentioning it
being used in GMO.
Yeah.
So I don't know what formulation it's used when you use it in a spray bottle. I'm guessing it's probably spore-forming, but I'm not exactly certain.
Because I wonder, I mean, BT is an example, because I want to get to the last part of the show, into the whole GMO issue, which was interesting and challenging to me. But, I mean, a lot of us know about BT. If we haven't used it as organic gardeners, we know about it as BT corn, which is corn that produces its own BT. And there's a lot of concern about that. So I think this kind of segues us into the whole idea about using GMOs to deal with these problems that are so hard to deal with, either organically or with the traditional pesticides. But So if I, you, I mean, when your sense of the BT corn, I mean, did you talk to people who more, who do people see that as a problem, that it has some potential consequences, we don't, unintended consequences, or is it the scientific consensus more that it's actually pretty benign?
Well, so I didn't specifically focus on the BT corn. I focused on a different kind of GMO, but when I did write about it, I've written about it in the context that it's kind of being misused to the extent that insects are becoming resistant to BT corn, which is one of the problems when you overuse any kind of solution. You know, we want these miracle solutions, and then we tend to just rely on them and overuse them. And so in that context, there has been a problem with BT corn in its overuse. Then it's not as effective. Then people who even want to use BT in an organic context by just applying the bacteria, you know, potentially it's not going to be as useful. But what I wrote about was a different kind of genetic engineering, because I wanted to make the point that while there are, I think personally that there are some genetically engineered plants that probably that are not so environmentally friendly. Some people might argue about that, but, you know, the ones that sort of encourage, that are herbicide resistant have been problematic, in part for, again, encouraging overuse.
Of herbicides.
And say that again?
Overuse of herbicides.
Yes, yeah. Overuse of herbicides. So that's clearly, I think, a problem, and it's kind of ironic because some of the first genetic engineers really thought that they were going to do something good for agriculture. But what I wrote about, sort of because I wanted to move away from some of these problems, was to look at plants that are being engineered in two ways that are kind of different. So one way is that they're engineering in resistance to a pathogen. So I wrote about potatoes that are being engineered to resist potato blight, which is the blight that is in part responsible for the Irish potato famine, and it's still a huge problem for growers today. It's also becoming a problem for tomatoes. And so in that story that I wrote about the research on that, I wrote about not only engineering in resistance genes, because resistance genes exist naturally in potato wild potato populations.
We have about like less than a minute, so if you can kind of wrap
that
up.
Okay. Well, anyway, so it's engineering where you're putting, you're creating an organism that could have been bred in, you know, you could breed them. And so there's no difference between those that were engineered and those that could have been bred to be resistant. And so it's a different take on engineering.
Well, I think we're going to have to leave that as an open question, since we have to finish off with our quiz drive. And it's something I'd really like to talk about more, because I found it interesting and kind of, I have a knee-jerk reaction against GMOs, but I think that I'm interested in hearing ways that it can be considered productive, and still I'd also want to know some of the science about what the unforeseen consequences could be. But that'll have to be another discussion sometime.
Yeah, well, I'd like to do that too, so that might be a future project.
Okay, great. Well, it was really good to talk with you. I really appreciate you being on, Emily.
Well, thank you so much, Barbara. This was really enjoyable.
Sure. We've been talking this morning with toxicologist Emily Monison, who's author of Natural Defense, Enlisting Bugs and Germs to Protect Our Food and Health. And now we're going to talk a little bit more with Celeste and Linda about why you need to call 877-500-5266 and become a member of KABU right now.
First, I want to thank Patra for becoming a brand new member here at KBOO Portland. That's what it's all about, not only keeping our golden, but attracting the new silver members. The reason you want to support KBOO, well, it's kind of similar to this program that Barbara has done today. We talked about how to protect yourself against pathogens and various other challenges in our environment. And to borrow that as an analogy, think about how KABU, with its in-depth reporting and its non-corporate community-based attitude, is kind of like an antiviral boost for bad news. for false news,
for the Trump administration,
alternative facts, you know, for all of those things which are designed to confuse you and to diffuse the sensitivity or the intensity of a situation and to lull you into a false sense of security. Not here at KBOO. You know, this is art that challenges. This is radio that challenges. And by calling it 877-500-5266, you're getting your inoculation. You're using those natural germ fighters, those naturally fighting germs, those that work for you, by getting the news and information that you need to keep your mind and your political astuteness sharp.
Yes, and I'm putting a special call out to last minuters because, believe it or not, this is the last minute for this show, for this hour, and for our goal. And we're only about halfway there. We need at least three of you at the $10 a month level to call in. Now, whatever level you feel is appropriate for you is the level you should give. But I'm suggesting $10 a month, $120 a year. I think many of us can afford $10 a month. And it makes such a difference. You know, it's your dollars that keep the lights on, that keep the microphones repaired, that keeps the door open to this really communal, huge community resource. We're really a gem. If you look at all of our live remote programming, and when something's going down politically and you're hearing nonsense on other stations, you can turn to KBOO.fm and get the straight news. It's 877-500-5266. Make a difference with your dollar right now. And this is
right
the
now.
Last minute. We
this
need you to call in right
minute.
Now.
KBOO.fm.
KBOO.fm is a good way to do it as well. Maybe you're on the run or you don't have time to talk. All you have to do is go online, KBOO.fm, and you can give now. Or if you want to call and talk and find out what kinds of information and inducements and thank yous we have, you can do so by dialing 877-500-5266. Like Linda said, we could use at least three more people coming in at the $10 a month level. That's painless.
To keep us on track for goal for this show.
Yes.
And this is one of the best shows that KBOO has.
Yes.
And I think you know that because you listen to it. You listen to the quality of the programming, the quality of the production, the depth of information and expertise that Barbara has that she brings to the questions. You know, there's interviews and there's interviews. One person could interview the same person and another not really get you the information that you need to know because they don't really have much background in it and they didn't do their homework.
Or not the passion.
Yeah, or not the passion, but you get passion and expertise here at KBOO.
Mm-hmm. And an understanding of the context.
That's right. And you make the difference with your dollars. 877-500-5266. That's the phone number to call. Know that every dollar you give is really used to its maximum. I mean, we don't waste money around here. And I'd love you. The other way you can give this morning is coming to 20 Southeast 8th Avenue. And you'll see we're a little worn, we're a little tattered, but we're so vibrantly alive.
Yes.
And we make sure that we have the equipment working. We don't care so much if our carpet looks good. We don't really have to have a pretty foyer out there for you.
But we have state-of-the-art broadcast equipment.
And we have people who can jerry-rig just about anything to make it into a live remote. So, you know, that's because they're part of the community, and this is a community station. They're not giving that to a commercial station.
So the number to call right now is 877-500-5266, or you can click online at kboo.fm. And Linda was talking about some of the really amazing people that I get to interview here, and you hear people who are really dedicating their lives to making the world better. And you can use them as a role model. Part of the way you can help make the world better, and I mean this seriously, is dedicate your money right now to KBOO by calling 877-500-5266. Your donation to KBOO, and you're not just donating, you're becoming a member of KBOO. You're becoming active. You're becoming a part of the community in a way that's very different from just passively sitting back and listening to stuff and going, oh, that's good. I'm glad I know this. I'm appreciating it. When you become a paying member of KBOO, you have a much more of a mutual mutual relationship with the information that you're hearing. You're helping to put that on the air. So you are, in fact, becoming a radio activist when you call 877-500-5266.
And if you join today and you become a member, you'll realize you start listening differently, and you'll find all the other treasure shows on KBOO that you love as reasons to donate as well. The number to get, dial is 877-500-5266. We really are talking to you. You make the difference. That's 877-500-5266. Call us right now.
Yes, and make your call, and the number can't be said enough. 877-500-5266. This is your chance to be a community hero. You become a hero when you support KBOO, because you know you like hearing the information and the news, but there are a lot of people who haven't stepped up to the plate yet. When you do, you rise head and shoulders above a lot of your neighbors, and you draw them to KBOO by setting a good example. 877-500-5266.
I can also promise you a happier day.
Oh, most definitely.
Yeah,
and actually, you're contributing to a winner.
We actually need to get out of here. So
we'll let Barbara go.
Okay, thanks, Emily and Celeste, Linda. And thanks everybody who's called and become a member of KBOO during this show. So thanks a lot. This morning, we were talking with Emily Morrison, author of Natural Defense, Enlisting Bugs and Germs to Protect Our Food and Health. And you've been listening to Locus Focus here on KBOO Community Radio. If you're just tuning in and you'd like to hear what you missed, or you want your friends or family to hear the show, you can listen to it online or download the audio later this afternoon on our website, kboo.fm/locus-focus. Next week, I'll be away. We'll be rebroadcasting a show I did a few weeks ago about the Eagle Creek Fire. The following week, I'll be back, and my guest will be Brett Vandenhoevel with Columbia Riverkeeper to talk about how the Snake River dams are killing salmon. My engineer is Patsy Kohlberg. I'm Barbara Bernstein. We're going to go out with some music by Paul Simon. And remember to become a member of KBOO or renew your membership during the last few days of our drive. Thanks for listening.
Went to my doctor yesterday. She said I seem to be okay. She said, Paul, you better look around. How long you think that you can run that body down?